Today, I'm going to talk about bootstrap spinning operators. So I've seen a lot of scalars in the first 2 days, and now we're moving to general spins. And so the lecture will based on those few papers with we have other authors sitting around here. And so first, I'll include some just a few sentences about the setup, the background, and next we'll go into actual computation, and finally we'll see the examples on GNY model. Okay, so first of all, going from pure scalar bootstraps to general bootstrap with general operators with spins, higher spins. I'll be looking at, those O IJKL operators at different space-time points. And so it's the usual procedure that we decompose them into the conformal structures and the functional coefficient that depends on the crossing ratio. And because now we have general spins, there can be multiple conformal structures that's invariant under conformal transformation. So that's what those I's are labeling. And as before, we can insert the identity operator to expand the four-point function in terms of conformal blocks. And again, because of general operators of general spins for three-point structures, we can get similar multiple conformal structures again. And that's what those A and B's are labeling. So in general four-point functions, we'll be looking at functional coefficients labeling by the four-point tensor structure I's. And they are decomposed into linear combinations of conformal blocks. So those are the usual conformal blocks. But now they are further labeled by the three-point structures, two three-point structures labels, and one four-point structure label, the same here. And so this is what the Block3D software computes. And so today we'll be looking at when looking at some four-point functions, what are the blocks we need, and what we need to do to find the ones that we need. Okay, so before going to the details, let's first fix some notation. So going from scalars to general spinning operators, we'll be considering Hermitian local primary operators O, each with a scaling dimension delta and the spin J, and J can be integers or half integers. And for each operator, we will represent them with 2J number of spinner indices. In D equals to 3 here. And those 2J spinner indices are these alphas. So alpha 1 goes up to alpha 2J. And each alpha I can be either 1 or 2. It's just because in D equals to 3, our spinners are two components, have two components. And so just mentioning it, the indices are symmetrized. And here are examples, like in fermions, then J equals to 1/2, then we just have one spinner index up here, while for the vector, the usual vectors, we'll decompose them into two spinners. Okay, and then the index-free notation is just a way of writing the spinning operators with some auxiliary polarization spinners. So that's what this S is. This S have two components, two real components, and we just contract the spinner indices with the spinner indices of the operator. And so from now on, we can simply write the operators in this way, where it's specified by its local coordinates and also the polarization spinner. And when we want to recover it, we can just keep taking derivatives with respect to the S. and questions. And now with this index-free notation, we can write down our two-point functions with those axillary polarization spinners. And you can see it here, the spinner indices are contracted with Pauli matrices. Okay, so just the usual thing. And moving on, we further can write down the three-point functions and four-point functions decomposed into different conformal structures. And so these are in the same, it's kind of very similar to the first slides or the first few slides I showed you. So here, the tensor structures are functions of x size and s size. And the A here is labeling the different three-point tensor structure. And very similarly for four-point functions, labeling by I instead. And of course, the OP coefficients become functions of the crossing ratios. Yeah, and yeah, again, the block decompositions. And where each blocks are labeled by the three-point structures and four-point structures. Okay.
Sorry, so the four-point structure is not just uniquely determined by combining the three-point structures, that's something additional?
So when you get four-point structures, it's the four-point structure decomposed directly when you when you look at the tensor products of four operators, while 3 points come from 3 points. Like, so they are more like projections that we saw like yesterday. So when you were seeing the flavor structure, flavor global symmetries.
But this 4 point guy, in principle, has some expression in terms of the 3 point structures. Like combining two of the 3 point structures, you get the 4 point structure.
Yeah, it's a combining, say you combine 3 point structures and then you form new set of representations. And those set of representations are those.
The thing I'd add is, the answer is yes, but it's useful to formally talk about the 4 point structures independent of the 3 point structures to start with and then relate them after the fact.
Okay,
and then moving on with the crossing symmetries. So it's a usual thing that you exchange the first and the third operators, and we could potentially get a plus minus sign depends on whether we're exchanging fermions or just bosons. And then using the notations from last slides, we can expand the left-hand side and right-hand side separately. And each side will get a linear combinations of the coefficients and the different structures. Then, then we can relate the different structures on each side and extract the coefficient in front of the same structures. Then we get crossing equations written in terms of the G functions, where this MIJ, this transfer matrix, is the relation between, we get these relations among different four-point tensor structures.
Sorry, why can I understand it as exchanging of a formula? I mean, that minus sign.
This minus sign?
Yeah,
so this is just like if those two are fermions.
So can I understand it as different time ordering?
So this is a Euclidean coordinator here, so its time order is fixed.
But then why can I have an extra minus sign here? I think you need some time ordering or normal ordering to get one that minus sign, right?
So I can speak to this a little bit. The minus sign comes from the, we're doing two separate things. We're swapping the order that it's like, there's no time ordering in the sense of like literally time coordinate, but we are swapping the order at which these operators are appearing in the correlation function. And then separately, in order to make it so that we're back to this conformal frame picture, which maybe I can talk about in the break, that requires a conformal transformation, and that in turn picks up a minus sign if, as Aika says, there are fermionic representation.
There is no time ordering, but you have ideal ordering in the derivative, so that's basic.
Thank you. Okay, and the next slide is, so this is what Block3D software does. So it computes on the blocks labeled by the internal exchange operator, of course, but also by the different tensor structures. So it computes the general blocks using some the recursion relation generalized to two general spins. And in particular, the Block3D will compute those blocks assuming that those three-point structures A and B is defined in SO3 bases. And SO3 bases are the total spins of combining the first two operators and the all three operators is what we mean by SO3 bases. And also it assumes that the four-point structures are labeled by in this way, where the Qs are the spin projections of each operators. So this is what Block3D takes as an argument. And the reason that it takes the three-point structures in SO3 bases is more of a computational argument. It's a computational advantage that motivates this choice. But we'll find out when we are writing down the crossing equations and writing down the OP channels, it's easier to work with the Q bases. So what I'm going to do next is to define what we mean by SO3 and Qs. But I will start with the Qs in three-point structures and rewrite them into SO3 bases, and then move on to the four-point structures in Q bases. Yeah, so that is a plan, three-point, four-point crossing equations, and what Block3D software takes as argument. And when I'm doing this, I will thread it in with examples when mixing sigma and the fermion operators. Okay. So let's move on to the three-point structures in Q bases. So the Q bases is defined in the following way. Given some quantum numbers, the Q basis structures are labeled by Q1, Q2, Q3, where Qs are the spin projections from minus Ji to Ji. And the little group of the conformal transformation, conformal symmetries impose this condition that Qi plus Q2 plus Q3 has to be zero. Okay, and these structures can be implicitly defined in this this special conformal frame. So in this configurations, those structures be reduced to just monomials of the spinners. Okay. And so right. So the reason we want to work with the Q bases is that they have rather nice properties under transformations like space parities or other permutations. And for example, under space parities, essentially the tensor structure is just is transformed by flipping the Qs. And yeah, so we want to work with structures that at the environment or has nice properties under such similar transformations, and it's easier to construct them in the Q basis because of these simple relations. Okay, flipped the wrong thing. Okay, so let's see an example first. So now we're looking at the three-point excuse me, three-point functions of sigma, psi, and then in exchange operator O. So now in Q basis, J1 is 0, J2 is 1/2, and because of the constraint that Qs have to sum up to 0, so Q3 can only be half integers again. So that forces the exchange operators to be fermionic too. And so we iterate through all the possible configurations here. And now moving on, assuming that sigma is odd and psi is even under parity, then because when we are decomposing the three-point functions, we want the parity of left-hand side and right-hand side to be consistent with each other. So that means here in this example particularly, the parity of the exchange operator O is opposite to the parity of the structure TA here. So that means like when we classify our channels that when we write down our channels, we write down like when O is even under parity or O is odd under parity, then we'll be looking at structures with definite parity. And so that motivates why we want to define the parity definite structures. And because of the relation you saw on the last slide, we can just take the linear combinations of the Qs and the minus Qs and form the parity definite structures this way. Okay. Questions? Okay. And now, as Block3D actually computes the three-point structures in SO3 bases, so now we need to relate the tensor structures in SO3 bases with the ones we have been working with at the Q bases. Okay. And so, as I, the Qs are, this should be Qis and Mis. The Qs are just the spin projections. So the tensor structures in Q bases we defined earlier is closely related to just the uncoupled spin states, the thing that we work with in quantum mechanics all the time. And those monomials transform in standard ways under SU2 algebra. And these are just the Clebsch-Gordan coefficient where we can relate the uncoupled spin states with coupled spin states. So those structures are in the so-called SO3 bases. Okay. Okay, and this is just to put formally what we mean by when in general configurations, what we mean by the how we defined the T structures labeled by J12 and J123. Okay, and so now back to our examples. We just use CG coefficient to rewrite our Q basis into SO3 basis. And according to how we take the linear combinations of the Q basis, we take the same linear combinations in the SO3 basis. Okay, so that's basically what we need to do for each of the three-point structure. And then now move on to four-point structures. And so four-point structures, we only need to care about the Q basis. And again, it's labeled by four different Qs, each Q is from minus J to J. But this time, there's no more constraints, like they have to sum up zero or not. There's no more constraints imposed by the conformal symmetry.
Sorry, can you return back to the three-point?
Yeah.
So for conserved current, some structures will vanish.
Mm-hmm.
How this basis can take care of this?
How this?
Maybe I can answer this question. The conserved current just the conservation law just say you have some number of independent coefficient, then they have some linear constraint. then that you just impose those constraints.
Could this constraint or?
You impose those constraints, then maybe 5 independent structures become 3 independent structures. That's it.
Thank you. Okay, and where were we? Here.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Why the q's don't have to sum up to 0 anymore? Because I thought the sum over q equal to 0 was just the statement of SO3 invariance.
It's a little group on the three. So previously, it's a little group on the three-point function, and that leaves 1 degree of freedom that they have. The constraint is that they have to sum up to 0. But for four-point functions, the little group is trivial, and so there's no more constraints on that part anymore.
So maybe I didn't understand what Q means.
So
Q is the spin projection of the actual operators that are in the four-point function?
For each of the operators in the four-point function, yeah.
But it's definitely true. I mean, the four-point function is SO3 invariant, right, at the end of the day? Or?
Yes.
So maybe I can say something. The SO3 basis is not... The nomenclature is very silly. It's the... and we can blame Peter and Luca for this. But for the three-point functions... You have a little group that is basically an O2 little group, or SO2 little group, and that is the where the constraint comes from to make Q1 plus Q2 plus Q3 equal 0. For the four-point function, the little group is just of conformal symmetry in 3D is just a Z2, and you no longer have that same constraint. So these cues actually are not literally the same cues because the configurations are different. We can talk about the exact formal details in the break.
By little group you mean? By little group you mean?
Oh, by little group I mean the once you've inserted your 3 or 4 operators into your conformal.
Why is it the little group that is relevant for this question?
Because we're using this conformal frame formalism, which is, like I said, you put things and you put the
operators. So say you have 3 operators, then just looking random 3 operators first and looking at the conformal groups and the conformal symmetries, and you can, using the transformations in conformal symmetry to bring them to certain certain point. And so for 3 points, it left a rotation degrees of freedom.
Yeah.
And that symmetry requires Q, the sum of Qs equals 0. With 4, you just don't have that one more generator left. And so that doesn't impose any more conditions.
So here, the little group is the subgroup of the conformal symmetry that left the operator in a certain point invariant, right?
Yeah.
But I guess my question is, how did we end up with this little group thing? So initially, we are trying to compute some just correlation functions in the CFD.
Mm-hmm.
At which point in the derivation did we say that it's the little group that becomes the relevant step?
So as a way to like gauge fix the conformal symmetry, we're putting ourselves in the conformal frame. This is a way of dealing with redundancies, essentially. And by putting those operators in the x1, x2, x3, x4 positions, you've used up almost all of your conformal transformations. And in the three-point function case, you haven't used literally all of them. The four-point functions, you've used all the continuous ones.
I think this is just some language thing. Maybe we can talk about it later.
Okay.
So this is highly dimension dependent, right? Go to other dimensions other than
3D. Yeah. Yeah. You are already talking about SO3, so it's...
Yeah.
This is
only for three-dimensional CFT.
Okay, so Okay, so there's one thing we need to be more careful with in when we are thinking of four-point structures. That is, well, in Peter's paper, we call it a stabilizer. So the stabilizers are basically permutations that it doesn't change the orderings of the operators, or it doesn't change the crossing ratios. For examples, for identity operators like for fermions four-point functions, then the stabilizers are the ones that that preserve the cross ratios. And well, since they're identical, so what do you call this double permutations?
The kinematic permutations.
That's not helpful. Okay, well, you know that group, and I'll just leave it here. And
these are cycles.
Yeah, I thought cycles include if just 1, 3. I also call it cycles, but maybe just me.
The parentheses are just permutation notation, the cycle notation, but these are the things that keep the cross ratios.
Yeah. I just was wondering in my undergrad math class.
Change the ordering, right? Like if you switch 1 and 2, then the ordering is changed.
But they are identical. Yes, they. If you label them like 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, yes, it changed to like 5, 2, 5, 1, 5, 4, 5, 3. Yes. And yeah, as you can see, if we're dealing with two types of operators, then this group is reduced to only a Z2 group. Okay, and why is this important? It's because it reduces the number of independent functional coefficients. And here are the examples with four fermions. So first we just did the usual thing, decompose them into linear combinations of structures. And then under, for example, this exchange of 1, 3 and 2, 4, then we, on this side, it just change the order of operators. And on the other hand side, because it preserves the cross ratios, so the first part, the function part, doesn't change, but the structure changes, and it just, if you work it out, it just brings a new factor, some numbers in front of the tensor structure. And if we just compare it with purely expanding this four-point functions in terms of the Q3, Q4, Q1, Q2 tensor structures, and we compare this to, we'll find that some functional coefficients are related to each other. This is missing a z bar here. But they are linear dependent. And so for example, if we have Q1, Q2, Q3, Q4 as up, up, and down, down, then we don't want to include both of them, both of the permutation. We just want to keep one. So that is the procedure of reducing the number of independent functional coefficients. Okay. But that, so the last two slides are not super relevant when we are dealing with mixed correlators with scalars and fermions. But we will see it again later when we bootstrap GNYs, when we have four fermions correlators. Okay, so coming back to this example, right, so here I just take the first correlator as an example. And, did I forget to mention? I'm sorry. I forget to mention that unlike three-point structures, when we need to form linear combinations to get the parity definite structures, those T, Q1, Q2, Q3, Q4 are already parity definite, and their parity is given by this number. So we are in Q basis, the T's already have definite parity. That is good. So here we just So because our correlator itself is parity even, so we'll keep the parity even structures here. Okay, and there are two more transformation sets more relevant in when doing bootstrap, and they correspond to some transformations relevant to the crossing symmetries, and that's the 1-2 exchange. 1-3 exchange, and on the 1-3 exchange, there's a factor coming in front of it, and you have to exchange the cues themselves, the spins themselves, and and another thing is the Z bar symmetry that we will we'll see how they are useful later. Okay, so now just moving on with crossing equations, and
we're going to discuss conservation and the classification into both line and points.
Of what? Sorry.
We're going to discuss the conservation and the following classification of bulk line and point functions that I have in the, for instance, DTT paper.
Not in this talk. Yeah. This is just general how to use block 3D model. Right, and now here the crossing equations. This is what we've seen before, and just expand them. So here it's the first two lines are just expanding each side separately, and from the second line to the third line, we'll use the transformation we saw here. Okay, and just plug it in, and then compare the first line and third lines, we get the crossing equations in terms of the functional coefficients. And so you can see in this basis, in this Q basis, we choose those MIJ matrix elements we saw earlier and takes simple forms. They're just either plus signs or minus signs. Okay, and coming back to the examples, the fermion is the sigma and the psi, we have two sets of crossing equations. So in terms of the correlators, and we just use what we got from last slide and decompose them into rewrite them into crossing equations in terms of the G functions, and just like before with the scalars, we regroup them into the crossing even and the crossing odd expressions. Okay, and then applying the derivative basis, which here is our derivative basis written in terms of partial z and partial z bar evaluated at the end at the crossing symmetric point. So now here we will use our relations under the exchange of z and z bar. That's just because at the end the our expressions is symmetric on has some symmetric properties under z and z exchange of z and z bar, and because of that we form new structures with a plus minus sign here, and that is just whether it's even or odd under this transformation. Okay, and this is just in the example what we do with it. Okay, and now I want to introduce some other coordinate bases called x and t. So x and t are here, and so first we take the x and y, the linear combinations of z and z bar, and t is just y squared. I actually don't know why we have to use t instead of y. In fact, in Hyperion, what you are going to look at this afternoon, you deal with y's instead of t's. But block 3D use t's, I don't know why.
Just to separate out things that are odd powers of y versus even powers of y by just talking in terms of t. So I think you have it in the slide.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, so, the crossing symmetric point here will become, so z equals z bar equals to 1/2 will become x equals to t equals to 0. And the crossings the crossing is z sent to the 1 minus z, z bar sent to 1 minus z bar, will act by sending x to minus x and y to minus y. And so here, just more like language that I hope can help you understand the code later on. The crossing even functions, so I'll label them by saying they are x, y even, crossing odd by x, y odd. And so the derivatives in terms of x and y, so crossing even coefficients function, we will want to act the operators such that the differential operators is x, y odd. So odd acting on even gives us zero. And the other one is the even operators act on the odd coefficients give us zero. Okay. And so that's the crossing exchange. And next is the z and z bar exchange. So z exchange with z bar keeps x invariant, but send y to minus y. And in the papers, in particular Peter's papers, it's called the t parity. And so t parity, y parity, basically the same thing. And so they're just, the labels we defined earlier, the plus and the minus will correspond to t parity even or y even or t parity odd or y odd. Okay, and as I said, this is a convention in Hyperion where the way we label them So this slide and next slide, I'm hoping to help you understand the code in the afternoon. So bear with me for now. These are what crossing. The blocks 3D takes. It takes coordinates x and t instead, and it's just because t is defined as y squared, so we have some coefficients in front of it. But in Hyperion, what you'll be writing down is, so that part is it's just the combinations of the functional coefficients. And you need to decide what differential operators you want to act on each of them. And so this second column's course in Hyperion, they were labeled the operators. So if you remember the first line, this expression is t parity even with this plus sign, and the whole expression is crossing even. So correspondingly, the operators, we want them to be x, y odd, and the y or t parity is the same as the expression. So yeah, the way we label the differential operators is x, y odd and y even, and then you just reduce them to be x odd and y even. Okay, so what you'll be seeing in the afternoon is the first column, and the last column is literally what we are going to put in the code. Okay, and there's some subtleness, it comes from the smoothness of the functional coefficients. And I don't really want to go into the detail here, but essentially it comes from requiring the functional coefficient to be smooth at the crossing symmetric point. And because of these constraints, there are some boundary conditions. And when it melts down to the crossing equations, we need to get rid of some linear dependence. And for this case in particular, is to get rid of the n equals to 0. Oh, I'm missing an m here, sorry. So get rid of the t the n equals to zero, so without this operator's case, this derivative case. Okay, so now we've come down to the point when we have all those labels, like the different tensor structures labels defined, and motivates why we want to deal with things in xt coordinates. And so this is what the block 3D computes. And this is how it takes its argument. So you can check the details of the arguments by typing help here. And so what it takes is, so block 3D takes parameters of all the J externals, so J1, 2, 3, 4. And in this example I'm giving is just 1/2, 0, 1/2, 0. And the J internals are the J's labeling the exchange operator O. And block 3D can take a list of spins here. And it will compute the J1, 2, 0 for you once you provided it with J1, 2 and J4, 3. And here the J1, 2, J4, 3 are just 1/2 or 0.5. And delta 1, 2 is a difference between delta 1 and delta 2 and delta 4, 3 similarly. And delta 1 plus delta 2. And the four-point structures are the Qs here. So here is just Q1 and Q3 equals to positive 1/2, and Q2 and Q4 equals to 0. Four-point sign is the sign here. It's the T parity sign here. And order lambda, k-pool orders of the standard things that you also encounter in scalar blocks. And the rest, the last line is also standard. And only thing, like here we specify the coordinates we want is x and t. It supports other coordinates as well.
I have a question.
Yeah.
So I think you can also specify z bar coordinate.
Yeah.
Why you want to use xt, not z bar?
So that is what I tried to motivate here in those few slides.
Z bar is hard to specify those smoothness.
Yeah, it's definitely, the smoothness consideration is definitely, because it will correspond to the z minus z bar. Okay, it's so essentially those are the Taylor expansions of your of the functional coefficients. And if you don't deal with t, then you will have to deal with z minus z bar. So you expand things in terms of z and z bar. Essentially that, I think. Okay, so that finished my introduction to the block 3Ds. And next I will show you an actual example of how we bootstrap the GeoMy model.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
On tensor structures again, though.
Yeah.
Here, from what I understood, you introduce four-point tensor structures and then you eliminate the extra ones, the redundancies, basically.
Yeah.
But in principle, you need to connect to tensor structures in the OB coefficients when you have the OB expansion, because every OB coefficient depends on tensor structures at the three-point level.
Mm-hmm.
So how does that happen? Does that happen at some point?
So you mean given a four-point structure, what are the OP coefficients are involved in this?
Yes, like in principle, if I imagine expanding a correlator,
yeah,
in blocks,
yeah,
the OB coefficients will depend on the three-point tensor structures at every OB that I do.
Mm-hmm.
And how do I connect those OB coefficients with these blocks then? Like which OB coefficients multiply these blocks?
So the OB coefficients are labeled by the 3 points. So they sum up. So if you sum up the OP coefficient labels, then you get the original, the function coefficients labeled by four-point structure. So here you decompose them in terms of different OP channels.
Okay.
This G12 is the spin of the internal.
Mm-hmm. 1, 2 are O1, O2, the external ones.
No, I mean G12 would be the spin of the internal propagating one.
No,
right?
No.
So let's see.
So the J12 are the 3-point tensor structures, the Q are the 4-point tensor structures.
Yeah.
So within the capital G, you have some kind of clutch Gordon that maps one to the other, I guess.
So that's the question of how you would compute the blocks, those blocks explicitly.
All you need to do as a user is write down what are the different conformal 3-point structures you could possibly have.
Mm-hmm.
That's what the J12, J12O are.
Yeah.
And you plug that directly into Blocks3D, and it spits out a conformal block for you. And so that takes care of the entire conformal part of what we do.
Mm-hmm.
And are you asking about flavor structures as well?
No.
Or? Okay.
No, just because like in the introduction on the G, the Qs were explained, but now the Gs also have those indices on the top, like J12, J12 roll, and it wasn't clear to me how these...
Can you show the recursion relation again? I think that's the right place to go.
Actually, I just missed something.
Actually, I mean, because in this case, there are many, many 3-point structures.
Yeah.
So each of them has one OP.
Yeah.
That thing is too late.
Yeah. So the AB here,
mm-hmm.
or the J12, J120,
okay.
J43, J430, if you have spinning, if you have more than one 3-point structure, that means you also have more than one OPE coefficient.
Yeah.
So, and that's all that is. And it gets implemented internally through this recursion relation.
Okay. Okay. So now with the actual model, so the GNY models are, three-dimensional ON grossly volume cover models with n number of Majorana fermions, and it's interacting with the pseudoscalar psi. So this is the UV theory, and we assume that the theory is invariant under global ON symmetry and under parity transformation. And there are some debatable applications in condensed matter. Why did I say debatable? So it just turns out the language condensed matter community uses slightly different from ours. So models they care about and the models who are written down here are not exactly the same. And so at n equals to 1, we have the emergent supersymmetries in this model arising at lambda equals to g squared. And Ning and Junchen studied this model by assuming the supersymmetry directly working with supersymmetric blocks. But in our case, we'll just work with general block 3Ds at n equals to 1. Okay, and...
You get it published in science?
No, that's the original topological. We're not traitors. Okay. Okay, now come to the bootstrap setup. So the operators will be looking at the fermions and parity even and parity odd scalars, and they can be identified with the original UV theory in this way.
I have a small question. How is arrowing captured in G12 and G12O?
Sorry, arrow?
Yeah, this thing L, how is it related to J12 and J12O? It related to the choice of J12 and J12O?
Oh, you mean this L?
Yeah.
So this is the spin here. It's a J. It's just J attached to each operator.
Your G12 and J12O have some range which depends on L, right?
So it's just two operators take the tensor products and they cast to the coupled ERIPs.
J12 is just a label, exactly as like I said, of the irrep of an irrep that's in the decomposition of the two external operators tensored together. J120 is then what happens if you take that irrep and tensor it with the internal operator.
They're just labels.
There's labels for a three-point structure. And the way this L manifests is the L's for the different operators determine what the tensor product decomposition looks like, because you get different irreps when you multiply two spin irreps together.
Yeah, so like the J, if we're looking at this operator, then J1 is 0, J2 is 0, and then another exchange operator is general J's. And that's the J12 is still scalars, and then J120s will be just that spins of the exchange operator. Yeah. Yeah, I'm sorry, I used a different notation here. But anyway, so the each operators in your theory now have, apart from the scaling dimensions, it has three labels, the spins and the parities, and there are representations under the global ON symmetry. Okay, right, so here we have the scalar singulate parity, sorry, parity odd scalar, singulate scalar, and the parity even singulate, and finally psi at spin 1/2, but even on the parity and transforms as a vector under the ON symmetry. Okay, and so the four-point functions involved in the bootstraps, I just listed all of them here. And also we need to iterate through all the relevant OP coefficients. And those A's will label the structures. Okay, and now because we have both conformal symmetry and a global symmetry, so our tensor structure will decompose into the conformal part and the flavor part. And it's just 3-point and 4-point separately. And okay, so now let's first look at the 3-point structures, and this is 3-point structures in of the global symmetry. And so this is very reminiscent of what Ning talked about yesterday. So they're just the projections to different irreps. Okay. And so that's the global structures, and with the conformal structures, it just iterates through all the possible Qs, Q1, 2, 3 in each case, and combine them with the global structures. So here I listed all of them, and those are things that we need to work out depending on the different properties of different operators. But yeah, so that's basically just write them out in a desirable basis and then transform them into SO3 structures with CG coefficients. Okay, so that lists the 3-point structures. And with the 4-point structures, similarly. So again, first to flavor structures. So for the scalar case and the scalar mixed with two fermions, they're trivial. We don't need to worry about them. But for the four fermion case, we decide to define our flavor structures in this basis just because they transform nicely under crossing symmetries. So we get two crossing even structures and one crossing odd structures. And after this, we will combine them with conformal structures labeled by the Qs. Okay. Okay, now first with the four fermions. And so four fermions, originally, of course, you have 2^4, 16 structures in all, just iterate through all the combinations of spins. And then the parity will restrict it to 8, down to 8. And after that, we require the invariant under the stabilizer groups, and that reduces 8 structures to 5 independent structures. And finally, we form the structures that have different parities under the Z and Z bar exchange. Okay, and so here we get four T parity even structures and one T parity odd structures. And well, is examples in the first in the last two sections, we've seen the how to write those how to write things down for sigma sigma and psi psi. And here is just replacing sigmas and epsilons. The procedures and the structures are exactly the same. And it's changed a little bit when we mix all three operators with sigma, epsilon, and psi psi. And this is just because now sigma, epsilon, one parity even, one parity odd, we want the four-point structures to, we want to take the parity odds four-point structures instead of parity even structures. And again, define the T-parity structures. Okay, so then you just write down everything that crossing symmetric, crossing anti-symmetric, and or crossing even or crossing odd. And clearly, even I'm too lazy to write everything down. The end of it is, and you end up with 38 crossing equations, and we'll be scanning 60 parameter space with scaling dimensions and the projective space of the OP coefficients. Okay, so that is all the input that you need to, all the input you need into the program. Oh, of course, sorry, one more thing is the gap assumptions and motivated by some perturbative calculations. Okay. And then you just scan the island. This is some old result. This is a real new results. So old results, you got regions. New results, you get tiny little points, those islands there.
So even for one crinator,
yeah.
Just look at one crinator. If it's spinning operator, then you would have the OPE matrix, right?
Mm-hmm.
And now, if you can consider like max crinator, you would have like matrix of matrix. How like to impose the positivity in this case?
Sorry, matrix
what,
of matrix?
What I mean is that like if you just consider scanner and consider mixed crinator, you would have the
measure
of the OP.
Yeah.
But now for one crinator, you would have a matrix of OP. So it's like a vector of the matrices.
Well, you just have a larger one. So
matrices nest. That's a nice thing you can do.
So for example, origin, you might have like yesterday, we have this big thing.
Yeah.
And now, for example, you just to get C, A1, A2,
yeah,
and goes on. But it's still just a one matrix. The vectors get long.
So it seems that when I increase the flavor number, the boson become heavier and the fermion become lighter, right? When I increase the number of the flavor.
Uh-huh.
So how should I understand this physically? So is there any understanding why if I increase this flavor number, the boson should become heavier?
I'm not so sure. So what I know is like this line is a large N calculation here. So this line, so I say by perturbative calculations, there is a trend of.
At large N, your problem constant of Joule's law is very small. Mm-hmm. So your announced dimension would be small. Mm-hmm. It would be one. But the scalar one, you need to understand it, how it's done on each transformation, so it becomes. The dimension is also grow.
So at infinite end, they should behave like
literally approach that.
So at n equals infinity, it approaches the point 1, 1 in this point.
Mm.
I mean, at n equals to infinity, your color is marginal, right? Then you just do counting, you get scale energy of Fermi.
Okay. Yeah, it's just another.
So sigma, sorry, in the n to infinity limit, sigma should be thought of as the bilinear of psi, like psi squared.
Yes, but after happens to an RH transformation, so it's
Okay, this is from the other projection.
I'm just curious, can you get islands from a single coordinator by closing some gaps? You know, we can get island for Wilson Fisher, just single coordinator.
I don't think so.
I don't think so, and we haven't tried, but I will get to the assumptions we use. The assumptions we used required us to use the mixed correlator.
I see. But for Wilson Fisher, sometimes if you impose a gap, let's say in the J prime and so on, then you can get island.
We didn't
get
that. Here.
So sigma is not psi, right? Because psi has dimension one.
Yes, that's why I'm saying
you
have to do that.
Yeah, you just look at the Yukawa in the term, right? That is marginal.
Oh, sigma psi is marginal.
I support in Chuan to ask, please, have you tried to plug in current, then add a gap after that? Plug in energy momentum tensor, add a gap after that. If you do this for fermion, do you get island? Identical open function fermion?
We haven't tried that.
Okay.
Can you increase n? Is there any island you can converge? Like, you can say about large n and then. Because I just see
going on with
make a plot for n equals 2, 4, 8. If you crazily increase this, okay, you like shrink to very small.
The islands are all very small. Like they don't change size because of the.
I don't know how reliable this.
Yeah, those are insights. so you should not take that to. Also, there might be an old version of the plot.
Okay, so
this one loop or two? The dashed line.
It's two loop in psi and one. No, actually, no. It's three loop in psi and two loop in sigma. You can look at the paper and find it.
Okay,
we're not at a bootstrap workshop to talk about perturbation theory.
So on the internet, in that sigma field should behave like psi bar, right?
That's what they were saying. I think the idea is that there's a trilinear coupling sigma psi psi in the Lagrangian, and each of sigma and psi have dimension one. So sigma psi psi become marginal. So the Yukawa coupling is exactly marginal.
Do you have difficulty finding the allowed points in this plot?
I say we did have difficulties, but some of them were mistakes that can be avoided. Was avoided later on. That's
Did you use navigator?
No.
So if you use navigator, it should be easier.
The thing is that we had a single correlator fermion work that had been done before, as well as unpublished mixed correlator work that had gave us some sense of where we might expect these islands. Also, we did not fully understand which assumptions would get us to an island, so we started out with almost everything being allowed and then annealed our way towards an island, if you want to think about it that way. So this is how we were able to do this. And we started working on this before.
Yeah, how's math projects going with the navigator on
I'm not still working on the unpublished stuff on navigator.
What were the mistakes to avoid, you were gonna say?
So I forgot to include enough spins when we essentially that.
How much was it in this case, actually? Like, if you put how many, it just gives you all not allowed.
How many spins?
Yeah, but I guess what you're saying is that if you don't put enough spins, you'll just get everything not allowed.
Yeah, yeah.
I think maybe the island is tiny, but it's just all not allowed.
Yeah, so it's so we've with the higher spins, we forgot, well, I forgot to put in the half spins in, so our spectrum usually looks like from 0 to say, 26 or some-ish, and then add some higher spins. And it just for the higher spins ones, we forgot to include the half spins. And once they are added, then we'll see the island.
For these 49 and 50 ones, for example.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, and then if you forgot those for the fermionic ones, it causes a problem. Like,
yeah, yeah.
Oh, well.
But at like lambda equals 27. So.
Yeah, it's very high lambda. That's the question. So those are just numbers. I think I updated those numbers. Yeah. Yeah. And compared with other studies to show off.
Did some, are you changing the slides?
Sorry?
Were you changing the slide?
Oh, yes.
Okay. Sorry.
Okay, it's...
Sorry, are there any like results for central charge in stress tensor turbulent function?
I don't think we reported them. No.
You can do it this afternoon.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. If you want, like, that's your exercise.
Wait, do we still have resources?
Yeah.
I thought I burned out the computer hours.
You got a new one. It's a new year.
Okay. Okay. So anyway, it froze, but that's the end of this lecture. And thanks for your attention.